that last part of the gospel could make a really good homily or a really interesting novel, and I'm not going to go to either places. So the gospel of St. Mark today is interesting because it's often used by those that do not like ritual and argue for a simpler, homier, humble church. They say the Pharisees were using these rituals and Jesus said, get rid of them. So they want to be, you know, like a Quaker meeting place or something like that. But this is also interesting because it does seem to contradict a little bit the first reading from Deuteronomy, where Moses enjoins the Israelites to obey the statutes of the law, to do what they can so that they can enter into the earthly promised land. So how do we reconcile kind of the first reading and the gospel? Well, it's especially important to understand when we're talking about anything with the law or God's law, that there is a God and none of us are him. So what Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, the Word of God, can do with respect to God's law is infinitely more expansive than what we can do. But is there really a conflict at all? If we're looking at what's being described here, it's really not a simple washing of the hands, you know, where you come and knock off all the crud. If you're working out in the garden and you have dirt all over your hands, you wash your hands. It really wasn't that. That's not what they were talking about. They were talking about a ritual purification. They were talking about how do you go from being unclean to being clean. And the reason for this was that as you kind of went through the history of Israel, especially after the exile, and you had a lot of Gentiles in the area, a lot of the Pharisees and some of the elders said, if you go out and you mingle with the Greeks, you mingle with the Gentiles, you have to purify yourself before you come in. They're kind of adding things in. So this purification that they're talking about was a purification that existed in the law. It was a purification that the priests in the temple would do before offering a sacrifice to God. So it was a ritual that was done before interacting with God, and the Pharisees took that ritual and decided to apply it to daily life. And then they criticized those who didn't follow their interpretation of what ritual, what things that approach are used before you approach the sacred, that they kind of appropriated into daily life. If people didn't agree with them, they criticized them. So Jesus wasn't changing the law at all. Jesus was going back to the basics, back to the law, back to what was received by Moses, and saying, this is the appropriate use of this ritual with respect to the sacred. And I think in the past I've talked about sacred and profane, and actually one of the guys who I was in deacon formation didn't like when I said sacred and profane, because profane has certain implications to it. So we agreed that when we were going to talk about this, that we would kind of say sacred, and he agreed with sacred, because sacred means set apart and separate and different. It's taken outside of what we normally encounter in society. And profane, a good definition or way to think of profane, is common or accessible. So common and accessible, as I'll get to later, aren't always bad. But there's a difference. There's a difference between that which is set apart, sacred, and that which is common or accessible. And that kind of gets to what we're trying to do here at St. Mark. So I'm going to get a little bit of digression here into church history. Everybody loves church history. But about 500 years ago, when the Protestants decided to leave the one true church, the church took a long, hard look at itself and came, and the Council of Trent, which was like 1560s or something like that, they kind of looked at it and they recognized that at that time, if somebody wanted to be a priest, they'd go find a priest, and then they'd do pretty much an apprenticeship. And because we didn't have the internet, we didn't have global communications, and even at that time, there wasn't much going on with the printing presses, is you start to get these regional variations in the liturgy. And so the Council of Trent realized that we needed to have that consistency. So they went in and they said, we're going to have seminaries, we're not just going to do apprenticeships, and we're going to really codify, we're going to put in a lot, write down very in a very detailed way, everything that goes on the Mass. And that was really, really needed at that point. But what also happened at that same time in history was we kind of had the Age of Discovery, or what's referred to as the Age of Discovery, when kind of the Europeans went out and finally became aware of the rest of the world. And one of the great things about that is that the Catholic faith was then really able to be preached to all parts of the world. If you fast forward to Vatican II, as people were realizing that that first problem as far as not having global communications and not understanding what people were doing, that we didn't now have global communications. We still didn't have the internet, but you know, but we had global communications and you could communicate. And so the consistency, being able to have the consistency of the Mass, was that problem was less of a problem. But what they were observing was that as the church went out into these areas, that people who are not from a similar cultural background, so if somebody was from an Indian culture or from an African culture, that many of the things within the Mass, they weren't resonating with them. And so Vatican II, one of the great things with Vatican II is they said, what level of flexibility is not exactly the right word, but relatively the right word to say, are there things that we can keep consistent with the Mass, but allow for a greater cultural resonance in some of these areas? Good thing. The way that people took that, unfortunately, is they said, well, I want to make the Mass more accessible. And when you make something more accessible, you make it less sacred. You make it less set apart. And so the result was that instead of necessarily getting to where there could be a greater cultural resonance with those people of a different culture, it became less sacred. And so that's something, I mean, one of the experiences I've had kind of along that lines is people will say, well, here you have at the Eucharistic prayer, or usually they don't say Eucharistic prayer. They'll say, usually when the priest is doing that thing at the altar, but the Eucharistic prayer, he's facing away from the people. Don't you know that when you have a speaker, the speaker connects best with the people when he's facing the people and talking directly to them and making eye contact? But the thing is, at the Eucharistic prayer, the priest isn't talking to the congregation. The priest is speaking to God in the person of Christ on our behalf. So if you say, well, if he was only over on this side and talking to us, it would really be much more like a speaker that we go to every day. But it's not a speaker we go to every day. It's something completely different and set apart. And if you think about it, we had the procession coming in. That's something you don't see a procession like that very often, you know, when you go to see... Well, actually, unfortunately, some sports teams do have, but you don't see, if you're going to a speaker or you're going to a meeting, you don't have a procession. So this is something where it signifies to us, it shows us that something, this is something different and set apart. And when I'm privileged to serve at the altar, because it really is a privilege, to me, the sacred nature of the Eucharist is really highlighted. And there are a lot of acts and actions and rituals that you can't necessarily see, but you kind of see what's going on, is like we lay out the corporal, which is that cloth. And there's a specific way that's done because the purpose of the corporal is to make sure that we capture any particles that break off from the consecrated host. And you say, why would you worry about that? Well, but the thing is, if the host is, as we know it is, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ, you need to treat those things with reverence. So the way that we lay out the altar, the way we purify the vessels, even the way we deal with incense, and we say there's a miracle occurring on the altar, we want to show reverence by incensing the altar. Father acting in persona Christi is the one who is acting in persona Christi, so we incense Father. You guys are active participants So you get incensed. And come to think of it, the only one who doesn't get incensed is the deacon. I'm not sure why, but that's something where that shows the reverence of what's going on, the importance of what's going on. This is something unique and different. This is not something that happens every day. And there's a quote, I couldn't find where it came from, but it stuck with me for a while. So I know I'm not giving proper attribution, so if I was writing a paper, I'd be in trouble. But it says, if you want to believe, first behave as if you believe. And so that's something. Right now we hear that it's only about 30 to 50% of Catholics really understand and believe the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And that's one of the things that we really are trying to do here, is to say, if we have the second person of the Holy Trinity, the creator of the world, God made flesh, the ruler of the universe, is here, how do you act? But he is here. He's here in the tabernacle right now, and in a few minutes he will be present in the Eucharist on the altar. And so that's the piece where that's hard to grasp. You know, as we heard in the Bread of Life discourse the last couple of weeks from the sixth chapter of St. John, Jesus said, "You must eat my flesh." And it said it to the ending. Many people left, they could not believe because this was a hard teaching. It was hard 2,000 years ago. It's still hard today. But if we behave and act and do things, recognizing that that is true, that lowers that bar to help us believe. So now that I've talked about the sacred and set apart, in the gospel, Jesus basically doesn't say, don't do the ritual. He says, do the ritual in the appropriate place. Because like I said, the Pharisees were saying, because you're in the marketplace and because you may have touched a Gentile, you need to purify yourself. And so they tried to set themselves apart completely in all things, sacred and non-sacred. But sometimes there's also that question you see in the gospel as far as the need to be accessible. And I think Pope Francis talks about it, and I'm sure we've all heard it, where Pope Francis talks about the need for us to go out and get the smell of sheep on our hands. Go out to the margins. Go out to the people who may not know the love of Christ. There's another aspect, though, of being accessible, because that is important. But there's an aspect of being accessible, which is bringing people into our community, into the parish of St. Mark. So society right now is not used to the sacred. They're not only not used to the sacred as it exists in the Catholic Church. The whole concept of sacred is foreign to so much of society. So it's intimidating, it's uncomfortable for people who aren't used to it to come in. So we really need to say, how do we achieve that acceptance and maintain the sacred? Now, when I was talking to somebody before the masses, and I decided to use this example, because I did have some Protestant friends who were actually, unfortunately, it was a young woman who was raised Catholic and then went to a Protestant denomination. And she said, this denomination is great. They are so open. They are so welcoming. They have a coffee bar in the back of their worship space. Like, not going to happen. So, and then she actually said, well, I went to a different church because they had better coffee at the coffee bar in the back of the worship space. So the thing is, so we do want to be welcoming. We do want to be accessible. But it's kind of like the place for welcoming and accessible is not necessarily in the liturgy. But that's why we have so many other great parts of Pax Christi. And one of them, you know, I think, you know, the Knights of Columbus do a wonderful job of putting on events that build community. And Bernie said, don't say that, but that's okay. So if you're a male over the age of 18 and you're not a member of the Knights, But think about it. But they also have, you know, but they put on the fish fries and the first Saturday suppers and the breakfast and all of those things. It's great food, but the main purpose is not food. The main purpose is getting us together. so that we can all meet each other. We can all build community. We can have a more robust community. And the more robust community we have, the more welcoming it can be. And we can feel comfortable bringing people in. We have the movie nights. And I think, you know, the movie nights are not about seeing a specific or particular movie, but it's a chance for us to get together and get to know each other better and build that community. You know, Diana did the I Love Latin workshops, and they were great for learning how to chant Latin, but they were also getting kind of like-minded people together and help building up that aspect of the community. So one of the groups that I really appreciate here, and we don't have enough of, so also think about this, is the ushers. Because I think the ushers are kind of at that interface between the sacred and the accessible. They're part of the liturgy. But they bring people in. And I don't know how many times I've talked to, you know, ushers, and they said, oh yeah, somebody asked me, they said, you know, what language is that father speaking? They say that more about Father Resio than Father Dervo. But, you know, and why are you using a foreign language? Or why are we singing in a foreign language? Or why does Father have his back to the people? And so that's something that, without diluting the sacred nature of the liturgy, the ushers are so wonderful because they can act as that bridge to help bring people in, help them feel accessible and understand what we're doing. So in the first reading, Moses reminds the Israelites that we must follow the law to enter the promised land. The Israelites were looking to enter the earthly promised land. We're looking to enter the heavenly promised land. Jesus is, as true God, the ultimate sacred. But Jesus became man and became accessible. We strive to encounter Christ in the sacred and try to make the liturgy sacred so that we can elevate our hearts and our minds to the Lord. But like I said before, sacred set apart. It's unfamiliar. It's different. It can be intimidating. It can be frightening to some people. That's why we're called to be accessible, to bring people to the sacred and to be Christ and to Christ. God is true God, or Jesus as true God and true man was the perfect union of the sacred and accessible. We'll never reach the level of perfection and have that exact balance, but we should all work to bring more people to Christ and to salvation and to the salvation that comes through him.